WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Mularkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
And good afternoon. All right, so here we go again. It's you, it's me, it's us. And the city and the county, and we're going to do it one more time. And I, you know, we're going to be together. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Mularkey.
Hello.
And we are going to do this a couple of more times, and then when Dave comes back, then he is going to rejoin your show. So it's us again, but we're going to fill this Friday with a lot of information. Because let me give you the rundown. Now, we do have City Hall here for the first half an hour. And we're going to talk to a couple of the representatives from City Council. And then at 1 o'clock, I'm going to be talking to a professor about the state redistricting. Are we doing this? Are we not doing this? What's the next week hold and why is that so important? So we're going to talk about that and try to understand that. And then before we leave together, we are going to talk to the South Butler County Library, the community library in Saxonburg on Main Street. They are going to be doing some renovations, and they have a big renovation plan that they're actually going to get prepared for this weekend. So if you're in Saxonburg and you go to the library, if you go by, I'll tell you this right now, no, they are not closing. So let's just leave that out there right now. She'll tell us about the services that are still going on and all the programs that are going to be offered as well. So that's going to be at about 1:30 this afternoon. I still have a couple of things. I was just reading the news to you, and there were a couple of pieces that I didn't get to because just time is short. So we'll talk about those two with the United Way, and we'll discuss that. So a packed show for a Friday. And we only have 30 minutes with City Council, so we need to get straight to it. Mayor Ben, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. It is nice to have you here, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You've been into our station before, in this capacity. Mayor, it's nice to have you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Councilman Mike Walter is on the phone with us. Hi, Councilman. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. And thank you for joining us, too.
Okay.
All right, he's here. Okay. Everybody is here. All right, so I'm going to start off with a bit of fun news and good news because it's just always nice to start off a show like that. But Butler Tires for Less.
Yeah.
I got to bring that up, Mayor, because that is such a nice thing for them.
Sure, yeah. I issued a proclamation. Monday is going to be Tires for Less Day for the city of Butler. They've been really helping out with the police fleet. And even picking up some of those costs and everything as well. So helping repair those vehicles and just being a great service to our community, helping lightening some of the load on the city's financial state and all out of the kindness of their heart. So
did they come to you? Did they come to council and say, hey, we can do this?
My understanding is they came to the police department and offered. And, of course, that was before my time. That was, I think, maybe September, October, something like that, that they started doing that. And they've really been Mike, do you have any more light to shed on that?
I know a couple of the auto parts suppliers also joined them on that. I cannot remember which one offhand. I'm driving right now, so you'll have to excuse me on remembering some of this stuff. And they came, I believe it was, it has to be September, October. I cannot remember the exact when they did, but they did come and made the offer to the police department.
That's quite generous of them, too, to be able to just say, hey, we can help you out in some capacity. So they're getting a proclamation.
Correct.
Yeah. So we were talking about that this morning
news. Monday the 29th.
Yeah.
So this coming Monday.
Mayor, I have to ask you this, because since you are in your capacity as your first official interview with us, how does it feel? How's it? You know, you had a great win, so congratulations to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It feels nice. I mean, it's nice to be here. It's always, I always feel comfortable being here in the studio, and it's great to be here the first time with you. And
How's it feel to be mayor?
How's it feel to be mayor?
Yeah.
Like a lot of work. I mean, it feels like, in a good way, though. I mean, there's lots of things going on, you know, and trying to be as in the office as much as possible, been in every day so far, and just, you know, really. There's a lot of things moving and going and picking up some of those pieces from before and trying to move them forward. New things that have developed since, you know, January 2nd that have developed and moving those. And then, you know, any spare time, if there is such a thing, just reading and digging in and discovering more about other things as well. So lots of meetings, lots of phone calls, but, you know, really trying to just push forward and make good things happen. And that's not just me, of course. I mean, I'm working with council and with the other people in the city. But it's nice to actually be able to dig in and get to work. Because you can have so many meetings ahead of time, but until you can actually start making decisions and things like that, it's you know, not a lot moves.
Yeah. So we're going to dive right into this because I say your first move, but council's first move was really to look at the budget and reopen that.
Correct.
And why did you feel that that was so important?
Well, I mean, and Mike's on the line, and he was an integral part of the budget last year, and that's not to take anything away from the folks who looked at the budget last year for this year. But, you know, coming in, I really just wanted to be able to say, okay, I'm on board. I'm going to be helping make decisions for the next year. I'm going to be part of that. I would like to have at least an eye on the budget and just, you know, see how I think things look. And because if I have to embrace that and move forward. So that was really my main prerogative. It wasn't that I immediately identified anything that was a super huge problem. There were some things that I think we all agreed that were could use a little tweaking, and no budget's ever going to be absolutely perfect. But mm-hmm. So, yeah, the first thing was just to try to evaluate where things were at and how we could address them.
And so, Councilman, since you are on the phone with us and you were a part of that last year, what is your take on it being reopened, but also that some things were decided, the fixed wages for city employees, and possibly looking at that loan, the $200,000 loan, that could be used for some cruisers, for a dump truck, things along that line? Because you were the dissenting vote yesterday, is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
And just to clarify, that loan, that $200,000 loan, that was in the budget. That is budgeted. So
okay, that was already budgeted. Okay.
It's just that we don't have, you know, the actual physical dollars aren't there yet, so it's just a matter of taking the loan in order to proceed with those purchases that were budgeted for.
So how do you work this out? Because if the city is strapped for money, and we're going to get to the aerial ladder truck here in just a minute.
Sure.
And of course, that's such a big issue. And yet you're reopening a budget where you have some fixed wages for some employees, mm-hmm. but now you're having to take a loan. How do you iron all of that out?
Yes.
And I'll ask you both that. So Mayor, I'll start with you.
How do we iron it out as far as?
Just as a long-term goal.
Sure. So some of those things, like I said, those vehicles were budgeted for. So that basically the money is accounted for. They're already in the budgets. It's just a matter of obtaining the funds now as opposed to at the end of the year when all the tax dollars and things like that come in and all the other various ways the city makes money. So those are certainly needs that the city has. And of course, there are many more needs, like you mentioned, that the city has that we're still evaluating, still looking at. So, you know, police cruisers, we're down a lot of cars. We absolutely need to have them. The codes department needs a vehicle to be able to go out and do their job effectively. And so it's just a matter of basically prioritizing where they go and making certain that we can get those in the most efficient and the most frugal way possible.
Councilman Walter, how about your opinion? Because you're focused in finance. How do you see this going on long term?
Well, I see the budget. I was a dissenting vote on this. My reasoning is that the changes that were made in the budget, I don't see where they were that many or that important, to tell you that, in my opinion.
Okay.
That's why I was dissenting on that. The $200,000 loan, that was just one method we had to do to pay for the vehicles quickly. You know, we need the vehicles. If we waited till the money came in, we were looking end of the year, and some of the vehicles we have are in really pretty bad shape, which is why Butler Tower helped us in maintenance on these. And the police cruisers are probably the worst ones. The truck for the streets department, the way I understand it, we'll probably replace two trucks. We're not replacing trucks. We're buying one truck. We will get rid of two. It will take the place of two. The one truck is really in pretty bad shape, and the other truck is, you know, it's not in that great of shape either. So the new truck will take care of that. And for the code enforcement officer, previously a dealership had lent us a car, but due to the new insurance regulations, the dealerships cannot do that. I checked with several dealerships to see if they'd do that. So we have to buy a car. And that particular car is a car that they don't put many miles on it. So that car should last a long, long time.
Well, and going along the lines of, it seems like we keep covering stories and we keep asking you stories about things that are breaking and things that are not up to code and things that we don't have. What do we have? Do we have anything that's been brand new or given to us? I mean, we've got to have something.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we do have vehicles that are in good working condition, but we don't have enough is essentially the problem. So,
okay.
I mean, our fleets in every department are aging in various ways. So there is a need that, there comes a point when you have to be, just like with your personal vehicle, you have to be smart about things. If you're just throwing good money after bad, you do have to make a decision at some point. Now, specifically with our police fleet, we're actually down vehicles entirely. It's not just that the vehicles are in such bad shape, although that is certainly the case. But some of the vehicles are just down entirely, through various reasons. So, there does come a point when you don't have the vehicles, but sometimes it's a matter of, we could invest another X number of dollars into this, but in 6 months we have to invest twice that much again. So we have some vehicles, but nothing is pristine or new.
So let's go from police to fire, because mm-hmm. the aerial truck is a huge, important issue.
Sure.
And, of course, with the recent fires that we've had, it's there are cases where we could have used that ladder truck and had it on scene very quickly. So what is the answer to that? Where does that lie right now? What's the process that we could get a new one, if that's a possibility?
So, and I think everyone agrees that we definitely need a ladder truck. There's no question about it. The issue, of course, with everything is money, and so that's where it comes down to. So I can tell you that we've been looking at some creative ways, some creative financing, different solutions for that problem, but also submitting grants, as of this week even, submitting some grants for FEMA and other entities to try to finance some of that. So I guess the answer is from January 2nd to now, I couldn't find a way to fit it into the budget for this year. But that doesn't mean we're not still evaluating it and trying to move as fast as possible. And part of the problem is if we were to, let's say tomorrow we told a dealer, we want to purchase a new truck from you immediately. They don't just have like a parking lot with trucks sitting in them.
Sure.
It's going to be 18 months. So we really need to plan quickly.
Councilman Walter, let me ask you this. With the money, if you were to get grants, if you were to find the financing, how long do you think financially we could go before we could find a solution, whether it's a used truck or a new truck?
That's a tough one. That really is a tough one. This year we had mandatory radio upgrades, which for the fire department was $50-some thousand, I don't remember exactly, and $103,000 in the police department, which they were mandatory. We had to do that, and that affected a lot of our decisions when making the budget. I don't have a crystal ball. I really don't.
That's okay.
I hope we can find some alternative or creative way to come up with a ladder truck as quickly as possible. We do need one. The last fire on Jefferson Street, we have three fire vehicles. We have the ladder truck and two engines. But the one engine was down for repairs at that time, so we actually only had one vehicle, And I'm thankful that we have neighbors that we rely on that, with the township and Saxonburg, they all came to help. My hat's off to them. We really appreciate that, and we would do the same for them if possible. But that's what your good neighbors do.
Yeah, and they do, and I applaud the neighbors as well. And knowing how important it is, though, there could be time that is saved. And so I'm wondering, is there a quicker, short-term solution that we could go with to be able to get a ladder truck in this area, in the city?
The answer is,
there are things being explored on that. I don't know. We're looking at creative ways to do this.
Okay, Mayor, how about you?
Yeah, that's That's correct. There's some things we're talking about that maybe aren't ready for public knowledge yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
In the works, basically.
So we don't have to wait 2 years down the road for a solution. Hopefully there will be a solution relatively quickly. I hope not.
I'm committed to a quick resolution for the issue.
Are neighbors in that conversation at all?
There are neighbors in the conversation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're helping at least in a conversation. So hopefully we'll get a resolution to that very soon.
Yep.
Another thing that's happening in the city, and folks, this is our city hall for today. Mayor Ben is with us, and also Councilman Walter is on the phone with us. And there is there's so many directions I want to go in, so let me just try to nail this one down. How about the Allegheny Health Network Cancer Treatment Center?
Yeah.
What is the status of that? And tell us a little bit about that.
So basically, they want to put a, as you said, a cancer treatment center down by Pullman Park here, where the transit houses some vehicles, and basically they had to apply for a conditional use because they want to, based on their plans and their needs, put in fewer parking spots than is mandated. But in the code, there is a provision for a conditional use. If they can prove that they don't need that many spots, then it can be resolved easily. So they paid for a study, they studied some of their other locations, and they presented the case to the Zoning Commission Hearing Board, and they recommended to City Council that we approve the conditional use, and that's what we voted on last night.
So, Councilman Walter, does that bring money into the city at all?
Well, that will be the Allegheny Health Network is going to be nonprofit. But the nonprofits, a lot of people don't like them for some reason, but the nonprofits provide a service that the governments cannot provide. What it will do is it will bring people into the city, and by people coming into the city, hopefully they will use some of the city's businesses and that's how it will help. It will also help as a draw for the city because people will know it's there. You know, so there is advantages to having it there. It will not directly bring money in, but it will help the city in the long run.
Do you know either one of you, is this a treatment center where people would stay overnight? Because if they do, then I'm thinking of the hotel, you know, downtown and, of course, surrounding areas. Or would people just have an outpatient appointment and then go back home?
I'm not 100% positive, but I'm relatively sure it's outpatient only. And Mike was saying, you know, it's good because, well, one, we have just right now we have a vacant piece of property there. If you look at other places where hospitals or treatment centers are, there are tons of other services that need to pop up around them in order to help service the individuals who go there, who work there, et cetera. You know, people who work there, they are going to be paying their employment tax, but then they're also going to need somewhere to go to lunch, and they're going to need somewhere to, maybe they need a doctor nearby where they work because that's when doctors are open. And so there are going to be opportunities for growth because of that center. And like Mike said, to bring people into the area that wouldn't otherwise have a reason to come to Butler.
Yeah, absolutely. Since we only have about 10 minutes with you left, let me ask you about the Center City project.
Sure.
What is the status of the hotel? Where is it going right now?
The latest thing that we've heard, and Mike, you can jump in if you've heard anything different, is that we're looking at an early March opening.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, was able to go tour it recently. They were installing, you know, like bed frames and things like that, mirrors, and it looks really nice. I mean, I think it looks like a great place. So obviously, I came in on the tail end of this, so I can't really talk too much about the history from a internal point of view, but I can say that what it looks like now is I'm really optimistic, and I know that they're booking things. In the past, they said, oh, we'll book things in the future, but now that the hotel has been sold and it's under new management, I think things are moving a little quicker.
I have to say, I'm from Butler. I moved away and then came back home and have been home since this has been, you know, erected, the hotel downtown. And I went down what, to me, when I was a kid, was a small, dark alley. And now you go down it and you could fit, it feels like three cars down this, what used to be an alley.
Right.
And I drove down it and I thought, wow, it'd be nice to have all of our streets look like this. You know, it's just such a change from what we're used to downtown.
Yeah.
And it has improved just that block. Do you find that, and Councilman, I'll ask you this, do you find that the hotel downtown will improve the other areas of downtown? Not that we have a bad downtown, it just increasingly improves.
Yes. I think it will help Last year was bad because of the delay in opening. But I think now that the hotel is going to be opening, it's going to be a huge improvement for the city. It's going to be a draw for the city. I look for a lot of, I look for it to bring a lot to the city. And if you go downtown, you can see a lot of happening downtown now. There's, you can almost feel it in the air, the optimism. I don't know how better to describe it. Everybody seems to be upbeat. As you know, was mentioned last night, Community College is looking at putting a presence downtown. And there's a lot going to be happening in the future that I think is going to be great for the city.
And just to clarify, I wanted to, I think you know this, and Mike and I know this, of course, but a lot of people seem to think that the city built the hotel, the city is going to manage the hotel, or something along those lines. And while there have been pieces that the city has had to approve or sign off on, you know, city council doesn't have any control or mandate over that hotel, or it's a private business. So I think there is sometimes some confusion about the city building a hotel when in reality, you know, the Redevelopment Authority was involved, and now their stake is removed through the sale. But it's not a city hotel, it's a hotel in the city.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people do think the opposite way. Just about 8 minutes with you left. I'm just going to kind of go down this list if I can. And let me go back to the budget for a second. We kind of mentioned the budget a couple of minutes ago. But you did have a first reading, which means it hasn't officially passed yet,
correct,
right? You still have to have another reading and a special meeting and be able to do that. But you did change the real estate tax, right? Are you going to go up to $1 million again? It was that $8 change that was from the last budget.
Right. So, yes, that was what was voted on. That would change it from what is legally in place now, but wouldn't be any different from what was put into place the third-ish week of December. Before the third week of December. So citizens will notice no difference on their taxes. Their taxes won't actually be going up. It's just that they won't be going down if the second reading passes.
So it stays the same. So it stays virtually the same.
Correct. I mean,
so the previous decision wasn't enacted yet. I mean, we wouldn't have seen those changes.
Well, the previous decision was voted on, and it was through. It was done in December to lower it. Basically, what council voted on last night was the first reading of raising it. Technically, by the legal definition, it is raising it.
Yes.
But citizens will, it'll be flat.
We're going back where we were.
Correct.
Yeah,
going back where we were less than a month ago, if it should pass.
Okay, and that was just going to be an $8 difference. And by doing that, Councilman Walter, is that going to bring us in more money or just save us money?
Well, what it's going to do, that particular, it's a street light tax. It can only be used for street lighting. Okay, we cannot use the money out of that fund for anything other than the street light utility bill or repairing street lights or replacing street lights, lighting, or various other lit areas. So that's why it was lowered last year, because we actually had an excess amount of funds in it that we couldn't spend. Right now we're looking at possibly upgrading the street lights, and that's why they voted to reinstitute the tax. The street lights have been on the back burner in the city for at least 11 years that I'm aware of. Yeah, but that's the only thing we can use that for, street lights. We can't use it for anything else, you know. So,
since we're talking,
I just want to say that to avoid confusion, to make people, you know, why we, if we were in financial shape, why we lowered it. Well, that fund, we could have $1 million in there, but we could only spend it on street lights.
So,
you know,
is there any other area that you are thinking, or maybe possibly thinking about, of raising to be able to bring money into the city to help us out, whether it be for a ladder truck or to pay off loans or any other financial area?
Myself, no.
Okay.
I don't think there's any room to raise anything. I don't think there's any need. I think we need to be more cognizant about how we spend. And then we need to be proactive in bringing in both business and homeownership, and just people who will contribute in a healthy way to the budget. So obviously you have to watch your expenses, but the way to make a city prosper is to bring in more individuals to help with those taxes.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey. I know, Mayor, you have to head out here. And Councilman Walter, if you could stick with me for another minute, we'll be back right after this. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey for It's Your Turn.
We've got colder weather on the way. You know, it's going to be like in the mid-teens all week long. And so what do you need to do? You need to get to Miller's Shoes to keep your feet warm. Jimmy and all the folks down at Miller's Shoes, they just got a new shipment of fur-lined women's boots. So not only will you look stylish, but it will keep your toes warm. Your feet will be all nice and warm, so you won't have to worry about cold feet. That's not what's on the agenda during the winter. So go down there, get all the famous name brands. I mean, they've got everything you want. They've got America's favorite SAS comfort shoes, so you wear the boots out. When you get back indoors, you slip on your SAS comfort shoes and you're ready to go. They have been the number one shoe store in Butler for 6 consecutive years. You know you're getting good customer service. They know who you are, and they're going to make sure that shoe is fitted just right for you. They've been in Butler for 123 years. On Main Street, it's a staple of downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes, they're open until 5 p.m. daily. Check them out, 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler.
And welcome back to the program. Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey for It's Your Turn. Of course, we'll spend our Friday together finishing out the next couple of minutes with our City Hall with City Council. And then at 1 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Mike Coulter. He's a professor at Grove City College, and he's going to be talking about the state and the redistricting. Are we doing this? Or are we not doing this? And why is the next week so important? He's going to tell us why. 1:30, we're going to talk to the South Butler Community Library, the library on Main Street in Saxonburg. They're going to be doing some renovations over the next few weeks. They will be open, but we'll talk to the library director on all that is planned over the next couple of weeks. But let's finish out. I know Mayor Ben had to make an appointment, so we appreciate him joining us, but Councilman Mike Walter is still with me. And Councilman, can you explain something which I find fascinating, and I think it's a great idea? It's an offer-up site with the police stations or police departments helping out folks who are buying something online.
Yes, what it is, it's in the, what they call an exchange point. If you were to buy something online, and there are half a dozen of these sites that I'm aware of, locally even, where you buy something and you maybe don't want them to come to your home for some reason, you know. And you see this a lot. If you look at these sites, they'll say, we'll meet at Clearview Mall, for instance. Well, this is just an exchange point. This is a place in town where people can meet to exchange things. That particular area has video cameras. It's well lit. There might or might not be a policeman on site there. I would say there's more often than not there would be a policeman there, but the fire department is also there too, and it's manned too. So it's a place where people can exchange goods safely.
And this is,
and
right,
that's what
this is, right out, this is right outside of the city police department. If I'm someone who wants that comfort of the cameras, should I be at any
yes.
particular point? Should I be on the side of the building or more in front of the fire department?
On the side of the the Newcastle side of the building where
okay.
the entranceway to the police department is.
Okay. So that could
and,
be, yeah.
And I was talking to the chief of police a while ago, and he had just recently received this, so it's just very serendipitous that this came out all at the same time. And then we talked to the mayor, and you know, or Braun Brown talked to the mayor, and it just it's a good thing for the city.
It is a good thing, because more and more people are selling things online, and more people, I'm one of them. It's like, I don't want you to come to my house. So it's a great opportunity to be able to meet at a central point in downtown. Councilman, I have one more question for you. We only have about a minute left, but I was just wondering if you could talk for a moment about the city manager position. I know you were talking about it, and I understand that you're not really ready to move on this, but why do you think this is important?
Well, when Michael Foreman, who's from the Department of Community, Economic and Community Development, came over and talked to us, and I've looked at it before, the city manager position in our type of city, it's a city manager slash city administrator slash city clerk position, you know. A lot of people like this idea. The communities our size typically they will go with either a strong city clerk or a city administrator, which is basically the same job. Some duties are different, but and the duties can be adjusted. There's really no budget in it to create a new position, so...
So you're still right now just exploring the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Councilman...
I would also like to say the first Friday after, first Saturday after council meetings, we have our light-up night for first responders on the front porch. Everybody should turn on their front porch lights, back porch light. Turn on all, you know, turn on all your outside lights just as... to support our first responders.
And a lot of folks get into that community involvement, which is a fabulous idea, so I'm glad you brought it up. Thank you.
Okay.
Councilman Walter, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your half hour and your time that you've taken for us today. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you. Have
Take
a great
care.
Day.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. All right. It's 1 o'clock. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey. We're going to take another short break. And we are going to come back now talking about the state. So we go from the city of Butler now to the state and redistricting, and we'll talk about that next. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey.
You're a dog owner, a dog parent. What does your dog mean to you? Company? Fun? Affection? Sure. But let's add comfort. Your dog offers a level of comfort at just the right time when you need some of that. Comfort. And that's what O'Shea offers at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler. Comfort. So many people have told us that with O'Shea present at a funeral, she offers a level of comfort that's indescribable. Comfort for the family and comfort for everyone attending. So O'Shea is available for a funeral service, but only if requested by the family. O'Shea creates a feeling of calm, comfort. So come in and meet O'Shea and see why so many folks want her here at a funeral. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, and our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home, the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Shipping things yourself can be extremely complex. You buy the box, you make sure it's secure, and then you got to tape it, then lug it into the car, to the post office. Ugh. Make life easier. Take it to Go and Postal. In between Villa Grande and Kings on Newcastle Road, Go and Postal takes care of all of that for you. And hey, they've got Valentine's Day cards as well, local honey, and lottery tickets. It's just a downright good place to go. Go and Postal, 140 Shockey Lane in Butler, if you got to plug it into the GPS, your friendly neighborhood shipping store.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey. And so we're almost at 5 o'clock, but not yet. The whistle is not blown. So we're going to spend some more time together, and we still have about an hour left. Of course, in about a half an hour, we will talk to the South Butler County Library about the renovations. If you're in that area, you're going to see a lot of movement. They're not closing. They will be open, and we'll explain what's happening in just about a half an hour. But what I wanted to do for the next half hour is talk about the state redistricting and the gerrymandering that's been thrown around, and what does all of that mean? And so with me right now is Professor Michael Coulter. Of course, he's been on the show before with Dave. He's with the Political Science Department, Grove City College. Hi, Professor. How you doing today?
Good. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for being with us. I wish we had you in person with graphs and charts, because I can tell you this is a lot of information.
And it is a complicated question, but I will do my best to help sort out some of the issues here.
All right. So first of all, tell us the Supreme Court in the state, what they decided this week. What does that mean that they say you have to redistrict this state?
Okay. So even just a little bit more background, is every 10 years, every state is assigned a number of members of Congress. Right. So after the 2010 census, Pennsylvania got 18 House members, U.S. House members. And then the legislature draws those districts, right, draws those 18 districts, and a map comes out in 2011, right, after a census. And typically in United States history, it's been there haven't been a way to challenge those districts, that is, meaning to legally challenge them. And not only in Pennsylvania, but across the country, there have been challenges that the districts have harmed some individuals because it sort of shut out their voice, the way in which the districts were drawn. Because they were drawn, arguably they were drawn to benefit one party over another. Okay, so that's the longer background. And what happened is there was a Supreme Court, or a lawsuit filed against Pennsylvania's 18 congressional districts last year, and it resulted in a state Supreme Court decision January 22nd, so on Monday, that said that the legislature has to redraw all 18 of those congressional districts. And this is really quite astonishing.
Let me ask you first, Professor, before we get into all the details of what will need to happen. Yeah. When you're talking about a moment ago about getting the House and 18 members there, and you know the states are redrawn. Has the state been redrawn before? Does this happen every time we get new members into the House?
Exactly. Every 10 years, we redraw the boundaries of four congressional districts.
Okay. So then, why is this decision so controversial?
Okay. Well, we've never had the districts are drawn by the state legislature, and we've never had the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has never said that these districts violate the Pennsylvania Constitution. And in other parts of the country, there have been lawsuits about particular districts, like this district harms some voters the way in which it's drawn, but there's not been a case where, like a large state like Pennsylvania, that has a lot of congressional districts that required an entire new map. And it's certainly not been, and there's not been something even close to this where a new map was required to be drawn several years after the initial map was determined.
And so my question there with that exact point, why now? I mean, how long has this lawsuit been into the state Supreme Court? Did it have anything to do with our past election?
It was drawn, this lawsuit was filed on June 15th of last year. So the districts had been in place for about 6 years. But this was a lawsuit, there's not been a lawsuit like this filed before. And I think that's why the court ruled differently. And also you could argue that there are, the members of the court, sometimes court decisions are a matter of who's on the court at the time. And typically, state Supreme Courts have not have just let the districts, have not interfered with partisan gerrymandering, that is, drawing a district to benefit a party. They have interfered, or they have struck down districts based on what gets called racial gerrymandering, that is, to benefit like a particular racial group or what's thought to harm a particular racial group. So this is new.
So can the national Supreme Court override or get involved with the state Supreme Court, the state's decision?
Right. Possibly. And so what happened is this week, the Republican leaders of the Pennsylvania State House and Senate, Mike Terzai from nearby Pittsburgh and Joe Scarnati, who's from Western Pennsylvania as well, they filed two different motions to stop this to stop the Supreme Court. Incidentally, they filed one of them with the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, saying this decision will lead to chaos in the elections this year. That motion for a stay was denied, but they also filed a motion to stay this case with the United States Supreme Court. And what they're saying there is that in this decision from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said that it ordered the Pennsylvania legislature to redraw the districts, and if the districts do not have if the legislature does not redraw the districts, then then the state legislature will present districts. And so what Terzai and Scarnati have said in filing this appeal is that this takes out the drawing of the districts away from the legislature and puts it in the hands of a different body, the Supreme Court. And the United States Constitution says that elections shall be determined by state legislatures. So there's there is a U.S. constitutional provision that could halt this case.
Well, and so my question then is, if it halts the case, it sounds like this isn't going to move that quickly. So what happens now? Because if the state Supreme Court has made their decision and the gavel went down, and now we're left with what?
Yeah. Well, I think within the next, I would expect within the next couple of days, we'll have a decision from, we either have a motion to stay this case, meaning just to put off the this order, and it will either be suspended entirely, or it will be the redrawing of the districts might occur next year. So it could be that, you know, and that we won't know that. I would expect we'd know that within, let's say, a week.
So are you saying that we would know within a week if the case has been stalled? Or
that's right.
Okay. So we would know within a week if we're moving forward with this.
Exactly right. So the options right now is the United States Supreme Court could either stall this case for a full hearing and just wait and have a remedy for this problem to occur next year in 2019, or they could overturn it entirely. It's hard to bet on what the Supreme Court is going to do, the United States Supreme Court. But if I were asked to, you know, to bet what I think would happen, I think there'll be at least a stay until there's a full hearing from the United States Supreme Court.
So if we get, and folks, if you're just joining me, Professor Michael Coulter with us, political science, Grove City College, talking about the redistricting of our state here in Pennsylvania. So let's say there is a stay. So let's now go down the hypothetical road. So if we have a stay, then what happens? Is it just more infighting for another year? I mean,
well,
what do we do?
Yeah, if we have a stay, it's just congressional districts are what they are right now. If you live in the 3rd Congressional District with Mike Kelly, nothing changes for you, right? Or if you, some of your listeners might be in the district that's in just outside of Butler County,
mm-hmm.
nothing changes for you. So in that sense, but if the decision, if there is not a stay granted by the United States Supreme Court, then, you know, the districts might change a little. They might change a lot. It's really hard to say what will happen in terms of the districts, because this is the really fascinating part of this order from the United States or the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court. They said that any congressional district plan, I'm quoting from their order on Monday, so shall consist of congressional districts composed of compact and contiguous territory, as nearly equal in population as practicable, and which do not divide any county, city, or other subdivision. So it's not just like slight shifting of the boundaries here or there, but it's trying to keep as many counties within a single congressional district, not dividing cities, and that could really lead to the whole map looking very different.
So when you say cities, are you talking Philly and Pittsburgh, or are you talking like places like the town of Shakor and Saxonburg? What do you mean by that?
All of them. That is, so for example, in Mercer County where I live, it's not in the current one, but at one time, the city of Hermitage was cut between two different congressional districts. And so this order would say that you have to keep as many cities as possible together. Now, you couldn't keep the city of Philadelphia in one congressional district because it's too big. And actually, right now, the city of Pittsburgh itself is in one congressional district, the 14th. But really, what happens is sometimes you'll find is on the edges of existing congressional districts that even little tiny cities like Butler or maybe not Shakor, that might be too small.
Yeah, okay.
But sort of mid-sized cities and townships get cut between two congressional districts. And so you'd have to show like a compelling reason why a political subdivision was cut between two or split between two congressional districts.
So if it goes down that road, and let's just say you do have to prove that, who proves that then? So again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about hypotheticals, folks, and we're not saying that this is done. But let's say Butler's in that kind of scenario. Does the city then have to prove it to the state, or
nope.
Do the legislators do that?
So the what the court has asked the legislature to do is say, go redraw these districts, present a plan, give it to the governor, and we will approve or disapprove of the plan, of the congressional districting plan. And if you don't give us a plan, we're going to draw our own districts. And so so let's say the legislature does get a plan by about February 15th, right, is what they or actually by February 9th is what they told the legislature to do. So let's say the legislature gets it done by February 9th, presents it to the governor, and then the court will approve or disapprove, right? And you could have other groups could file cases. So it could be like the city of Butler. It's highly unlikely, but let's just hypothetical.
Yeah, for the sake of our conversation, sure.
Sake of conversation, it could be that the city of Butler might not like maybe city of Butler does get divided between two congressional districts. They could file a motion with the court saying they don't like it. It's very rare that those things happen, and usually, I wouldn't expect that at all in this case. If anything, you could see like a larger city that would be divided, like Pittsburgh or the way Pittsburgh gets divided, that might result in the city of Pittsburgh filing something. But for the most part, small communities tend not to file appeals to district maps.
Professor, to me, in the way you're describing it, it sounds like a very unpleasant long road ahead if it goes down that path. And so my question is, was this necessary in the beginning?
That's a good question. And so what the League of Women Voters did, who are the ones who sponsored this case, is they have a person from each of the existing 18 congressional districts, and these people said, my vote and my opinions have been are hard to communicate or hard to get have been prevented from getting out. My speech has been affected because of the way these districts have been drawn. It's an unusual argument that I actually didn't think it would lead to the Supreme Court, this Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision, but it did. And so those people might say, the League of Women Voters would say back to you and say, well, this is a complicated process. This could be long and arduous. But in the end, more people's political voices will be heard if we have like compact and contiguous districts rather than districts that are, you know, look like Rorschach tests.
Okay, so then for those of us that are in my boat, that political science was not my major, it's not my expertise.
Sure, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's why I have you, so I'm going to ask you this question. So going on that point then, why, and I know you can't speak for them, you're not their spokesperson, but why do people feel that their voices can't be heard within their district? Because in the end, don't we all vote, or we should be voting, but right. In the end, don't we all vote?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why I didn't think that this case would work. And for the most part, similar kinds of challenges in the past were rejected. It's saying like, look, everybody gets to vote. But what some of the evidence that was presented in this case would say something like, across the state, if you add up the total number of people's votes for Democratic members of Congress versus Republican members of Congress, they're often very equal, right, in Pennsylvania and in other states. But in Pennsylvania, right, we have 18 total House members, U.S. House members, 13 of those are Republicans and 5 of those are Democrats. And that the partisan gerrymandering has harmed some people who if you'd put their votes together, let's say, would have elected a Democrat or someone of, but because they're like Democrats in this case have been spread out, right? Or that it's hard for them to elect somebody who shares their views. So you're right that each individual still gets a vote. That's not. But when people voting together, right, in a district, that their voices have been diluted by the way the maps have been drawn.
Professor Coulter, when you describe that, obviously we're getting numbers of. Different numbers of representatives in each position. Would this particular scenario, if we go down the process of redistricting, even though, again, the state Supreme Court has said that's what is going to happen, if it goes down that path, would it or could it even out the number of elected officials for the Republican side versus the Democratic side?
Yeah, it may not be perfectly equal. It might not be 9-9, but most And again, we don't know what the map could look like, but it wouldn't surprise me if we end up with 10-8, or 11-7, or maybe 9-9. You would get, and I think the Supreme Court wouldn't reject an outcome that would lead to 10-8 or even 11-7. But I think that when you have nearly equal number of votes when you add them up across the state, and then you have a fairly big disparity of 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats, I think that contributed to the that contributed to the thinking of the Supreme Court, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, in this decision.
A lot of times when there's change in anything in life, a lot of us just tend to shut down or, emotionally explode just to say, wait, this is going to be that unpleasant long road ahead.
Yeah.
But could it end up being a positive for our state?
Well, this could end up where maybe they do shift the map kind of quickly. It's not, in one sense, we have a lot of technology that can help us draw districts. And it could be that the Pennsylvania legislature, with the aid of staff members, puts together a district that maybe in the end Republicans, it ends up being 11 Republicans and 7 Democrats. The districts are not entirely shifted, but they're kind of shifted enough that it satisfies the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And so in the end, it could be that, it may not be incredibly arduous, this process. That's like the most rosiest scenario that sort of comes out of this. The worst case scenario is that, the most complicated scenario, it's not necessarily, I shouldn't put it as the worst case. The complicated scenario is that there's lots of lawsuits about districts. You get, the elections for this year are kind of thrown into chaos because right now, if you want to run for Congress, let's say you wanted to run against Mike Kelly. Or I'm just picking because they were here in this district.
Sure, absolutely.
And people make decisions about when they run for Congress based on the nature of the district. Who lives in the district? Where can they get funding from? What's their likelihood of winning? Right. And so they make that decision on what the district they think is going to look like. But if the district's uncertain, that might discourage people from running. And if you have people discouraged from running, you'd have less electoral competition. And in general, political scientists think, and I think everyday people think this as well, is that electoral competition is a good thing. We should have people running against each other. That's a good thing for democracy. The worst possible outcome is this discourages lots of people from running for office.
Explain to us, when you say electoral competition, I'm going to kind of take a left-hand turn for a moment because that speaks to me whenever you say that, especially with the past election that we had. Not for or against the past election. I'm just saying that, you have the Electoral College.
Oh, yeah.
State elections, are they different than having an Electoral College within the nation?
Sure, absolutely. And what I mean by electoral competition is just that in every district, we hope that there's two major party candidates running against each other. But I should say it's generally good that when there's a competitive election, people tend to be informed more about what's going on, right? They people knock on their doors and they send them mail and people are kind of aware of issues. So that when people live in districts that are competitive, they tend to know more about what's going on, and it's probably it's a good thing that Democratic citizens kind of know more about what's going on. So that's why that's kind of what I meant by electoral competition. That is just there's just people running against each other.
Sure, I want to ask you this one question in our story that Kayla Molzan wrote up. I do believe it. She's our news director here with WISR. In there, it says the lawsuit going back to the lawsuit here, of course, with that the state Supreme Court decided on. But the lawsuit by a group of voters says the 2011 Republican drawn map is too partisan and violates the state constitution. So going back to who writes all of this up, does that mean that the Republicans wrote it or it's just in favor? Because I've heard through different stories that part of the lawsuit was saying that it favors the Republicans. Can you clear that up for us?
Sure. So the way the Pennsylvania works in Pennsylvania is the state legislature determines the boundaries of the U.S. congressional districts. And so it's a vote by the state legislature, and whichever party has the majority draws the districts to their in a way that favors them. And Republicans control both the Pennsylvania House and the Pennsylvania Senate. So that's what I mean by approved by Republicans. The Democrats all voted against it, but that's normal. That's kind of how things work. And it's generally, you know, this is Pennsylvania is thought to have been, if not the most, but one of the most partisan gerrymandered, that is districts drawn in a way that favors one party, in this case the Republicans, that the districts were really drawn in a way that favored Republicans. And you had a Republican governor and you had a Republican control of the state house and state senate.
So what is the general feel? Can you give us a description, if you would, of what's being said? What's the feel on both the Republican side and the Democratic side since this decision was made?
Well, I think the Republicans are trying to get this case at least a stay on it so that you wouldn't get new districts till next year. And the Republicans filed one of the motions to file for a stay actually involved what are called Republican State Committee people. So there's a long list of citizens, of people who live in different congressional districts. So Republicans want this stayed. I think Democrats, both in the state and nationally, think that this is an opportunity to win a few more Democratic House members. And if this, you know, here's where this is interesting nationally, is Democrats nationally need about two dozen seats to win control of the U.S. Congress.
Nationally or just from PA?
Nationally.
Okay.
But, yeah. So the advantage, the Republicans have a pretty sizable advantage in the U.S. House right now in Washington. In order for the Democrats to gain control, they need, about 24 seats. Well, it's hard to pick up seats. In the midterm of a president, usually the party out of power wins seats, in a midterm election. So you would expect Democrats to win seats in the U.S. House this year.
Okay.
But it's hard to find 24 seats to win across the country. If this led to, say, three or four or five more Democratic seats in Pennsylvania, that would go a long way towards helping the Democrats gain control of the United States House of Representatives.
I'm going to go back down to the long, unpleasant road, though, because would this or could this be done by the time midterm elections, if it is such a long process to do?
Well, if the Supreme Court does not grant a stay, and then if the Pennsylvania House submits a new plan, or if they don't submit a new plan, Pennsylvania General Assembly, doesn't submit a new plan, and the state Supreme Court issues what will be the new congressional districts, this would be the congressional districts for 2018. So that would happen. That could change, flip seats from Republican to Democrat, three or four, maybe five seats this year.
Hmm. It is very interesting. It is a lot of information, but I'm glad that you're here to at least give us a peek in, because I know we've just scratched the surface in talking about this. One more question, though, for you, and then I want to ask your final thoughts. But when you say we have 18 districts, if things are redrawn, could we have more than 18, or do we stick at 18?
We're stuck at 18 until 2021. So by federal law, there are 435 members of the U.S. House, and those are distributed based on state populations. So they've got to draw a map that has 18 congressional districts, if they have to draw a new map, that map will have 18 congressional districts.
All right, Professor, just your final thoughts on all this, because I know we could keep you for a couple of hours, but
yeah.
What do you want us to know today as we walk away?
Well, I think what we want to know is what happens in the next, say, week really makes all the difference. That is, if there's a stay, then everything's normal. Then everything's as it was for the last 6 years. If there is no stay, then the next couple of weeks are going to be a furious activity to redraw districts and determine who's running.
Professor Michael Coulter, Political Science, Grove City College, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Hope I was helpful.
And indeed you were. Thank you very much. We are going to take a quick break. And when we return on the other side, we're going to be talking to the South Butler County Library. And they are having some renovations happening. They're going to be taking care of a portion of their library. But the key is you're going to see a lot of activity, but they are going to remain open. So they will still have your meeting spaces. They're still going to have the services that they provide and the activities. Those are still going to be underway. They are going to ask you to go into a particular door. We'll cover all of that right after this. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey with WYSR 680 with It's Your Turn.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, we've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and was recently honored to be named 2017 Family Business of the Year by the Pittsburgh Business Times. Check it out online at huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Across our network, Hunter will provide solutions for all your trucking needs.
At Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, our orthopedic surgeons, sports medicine specialists, physiatry, and rheumatology experts are committed to your health. Whether it's joint pain, a sports injury, a worker's comp injury, or you need help managing your arthritis or chronic pain, their physicians provide high-quality care to patients in 7 locations, including 2 right here in Butler and 1 in Slippery Rock. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome, 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 welcome back. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey today for It's Your Turn. So it is Friday. Thank goodness we've made it. You and I have just about, a short time left. We're here until 2 o'clock together. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a little bit of time to talk to the Saxonburg Library, the South Butler Community Library. It's in Saxonburg on Main Street. And the reason I wanted to do this is because there are a lot of folks in that area that like to use the library. And, of course, there are folks who use the other libraries that they're all connected in the way of sharing in Butler County. So there's going to be some renovations going on in South Butler at the South Butler County Library. But I wanted to talk about this because I want to know what's going on, but also to let you know that the library is not going to be closed. So first, let's welcome in the head librarian. She is the library director, Michelle Lesniak. And Michelle, thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule, because this week you all are quite busy.
It's a busy week with the renovations coming and the move.
Yeah, so tell me, so you said renovations, you said move. So are there two things happening or one? What's happening this weekend?
Well, this week has been the preparations for the renovations that will begin on Monday. And to lead up to that, we are doing those renovations in a large space in the main area of our library, so it has to be empty. So the move is actually moving all the contents of that room off-site.
Okay, so first question is, will the library be open this weekend, or are you closing that?
Nope, we are open, and we will remain open during the entire renovation. We're lucky that we have 2 entrances, so we can use our rear entrance at the back where the children's room is, as our main entrance during the renovations. And the library will be operational, all activities. We'll use the children's room, the teen room. We've also taken over some storage space. And we're actually going to keep some of the collection, you know, some things on site, our high circulating books, and all of our audio books and all of our DVDs. We've kind of squeezed into the space so that we can still offer to the patrons as they come in.
Good. Okay, so the library is open this week. We're talking, of course, of South Butler County Library, the community library there in Saxonburg on Main Street. So now let's get into the details of this renovation, the move. So where is in the move? Where is all your stuff going to?
Well, we're very fortunate to have our municipality partners, both Saxonburg Borough and Winfield Township, have some little extra storage space that they're allowing us to use so that we can keep the collection safe. So we're using that. And then we did have Smithco donated a storage unit for some of the shelving and things that we need to store as well. So we're thankful that we have those partners that are willing to help us out.
So what are you renovating? I know you said that big space there. I can picture that when you go in the front door. But what are you doing to it?
Well, it is in need of definitely some updates. In 2012, we did the children's room. In 2013, the teen room was done. And it's been a few years and trying to figure out how we could make that renovation, but we're going to take that whole front area where you walk in the front door back to the teen room, so the big space there will all be worked on. And we're fortunate that it actually came because we received a bequest last year, and the board was interested and willing to allocate that bequeath towards this renovation. It was not in our budget, so we're happy that we're able to do it. And so we're going to get new lighting, LED lighting, which is fabulous for our libraries, and get rid of the old fluorescent lights. They're going to suspend the ceiling a little bit so they can get those lights in there, and it'll look really nice. We are also putting down new carpet, which we need badly. We get a lot of traffic, so it has showing its wear and tear.
Well, and the thing with new carpet, I love new carpet, love the smell, love the feel. But the day that you get the new carpet, you want to tell everybody, take your shoes off.
It's exactly true. But we took a long-term approach to this and said the thing to do, both in commercial and in libraries now, is to use the carpet squares.
Okay.
So we are putting the carpet squares down because, one, you can replace little bits and pieces, and literally can pick them up and hose them off if you really need
it. Oh, there you go. Good. Okay, good. You have that solved. Okay, so we got lights coming in. We have new carpeting coming in. What else are you going to do?
And then we got to paint it. It's got to have a fresh look. So we're looking to expand some of our logo colors from the back of the library and incorporate all of that into the front end. So it'll be interesting. We're in the final stages of planning all the little details, but it'll be a nice, bright space. And one of the unique things that we're doing is with our shelving, actually.
Okay, because right now you have the shelving that is just lined up one after another in that adult section.
Right. It's you know, 8 feet tall. It lines the whole library. You can't see from one end to the other. It's, you know, kind of closes it in. So what we did, we were able to find a shelving unit. It's called compact shelving. And if you've been in large libraries, they have them, and small libraries don't get them very often because they're really expensive. What we were able to do is find a used set for 10% of the cost of a new set. So that allows us a lot of flexibility. It will be, if you think of most people, if they've seen it, they've probably seen it in medical records where the file cabinets slide on a track and they push them so that they can get into the aisles.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it'll be similar to that, where you have a crank and you can open up an aisle between, you know, two of the rows and go in and get what you want and then come out. Of course, we're going to use it for things that are not used very often, you know, things that are referenced, things that, you know, aren't circulating as much. So, you know, patrons will be able to use it, but it saves us a ton of floor space. And what that allows us to do is to put lower shelving so that we can see.
I was going to ask, because this little five-foot person sitting right here.
Exactly. So it takes away the very high shelves, which most people aren't really comfortable with anyhow, but it also allows us to do lower shelves. And the advantage of lower shelves, and I don't know that we'll afford all of this right up front, is that you can caster them and move them around. So you can then have a flexible space, which is really the end goal.
So visually, now I've seen before what you're referencing, but for those folks who have not, visually, because a lot of us will scan the shelf and maybe find something and say, okay, that's the book I want to choose.
Mm-hmm.
In that kind of situation, are we going to be able to see the whole display, or are we going to have to kind of search through?
No, all the low shelving will have all the current things and, you know, the things that are circulating. And it'll be just like you can see now. You know, they will be on shelves. You'll be able to look at them. And we'll be able to actually divide them up a little better and actually make some categories where you don't have to search as much, because we can say, hey, this, you know, 6 foot section is travel and science and, you know, these things. So I think it'll be much more user friendly in the end, because you'll kind of get to know where things are, and it's divided up a little better.
So I know that you're talking about renovations to the adult room. I'm going to kind of take a left-hand turn on you for a moment. Any plans down the road to add on to the library? Is that ever a possibility there in South Butler?
You know, that's always the thing. Where's the capital? Where's the, yeah, where are you going to build? And I said, at this point, we're not seeing, you know, we see a lot of traffic and we really have a lot of, you know, people using the library. So I can see that down the road. Right now, we need some more flexible space so that we can add to the program to get the more people in. So I think we still have a little more justification to do before we would expand. A lot of people know that we've got part of the, we still have ground behind us, and there definitely is space for that. But it is not in the works. It's not in the strategic plan. I think it's just kind of a vision thing. We'll see how it goes. One of the things we want to do is capture a lot more people in the community using the library and to show them what we can offer. And we've got many ideas for this space, and if we had more space, what we could do. So I hope someday we get there.
So again, we're talking with the South Butler Community Library. Michelle Lesniak is the library director, and the renovations to the adult room is going to be starting this weekend. Are you going to name this particular renovation after anyone? I know a lot of libraries like to name a room or a space after someone.
Not in particular. We will recognize the donor, you know, as part of it when we do our little reopening. Just want to make it good for the community, and really there will be a lot of people involved in helping us do this. The Friends have given us money in addition to help with the furniture. So, you know, everybody kind of pitches in where they can, and I think we'll probably need more things as we go, as people see and go, oh my gosh, this is really great.
Yeah, absolutely.
the things that we couldn't quite do everything, because I said, you know, the big plan, you know, it's hard to do all that with what we have. So I think people will be excited, and it'll be great.
So talk to me about how long this is going to take. You say the move is starting this weekend, the renovations start this weekend. In a perfect world, it would be done in like 8 hours, right? And then we can get back to business.
Exactly. Well, we're anticipating about 3 to 4 weeks, so it will be toward the end of February. We don't want to state an exact date yet, but it will be between 3 and 4 weeks, and then we'll be open. We'd definitely be open before March.
So do you need volunteers this weekend, or do you have everyone lined up?
Well, we have quite a few lined up. I did post on Facebook today, hey, we could probably use a few more. Just carrying boxes and things, you know, it takes a lot out of people and shelving. So if there is anybody who wants to volunteer, just they can call the library and just say they're interested, and we'll be happy to sign them up.
And, of course, the library's number is 352-4810, and this is correct. The South Butler Community Library, right on Main Street in Saxonburg. A very nice location and a great library. You do have a lot of people coming through there, which is always nice to see, especially in the age of technology, computers, digital. But you have a lot of services, too, that people come in and use your computers.
Right. We have public computers, which will still be operational during the renovation. We do Wi-Fi. We have fax and copy and scan services. So, you know, there's always something that people can use. And I think just the idea that, you know, it's a great meeting space. A lot of times people just come here when they need to meet somebody. You know, we have a lot of tutors that come in. We have people that kind of have their ad hoc meetings here. So there's a lot of ways, and I think the space change will help that, but there's a lot of reasons to come in. And I can't say enough about the children's programming that we have that's just extensive.
So since you said meeting space, I'm glad you said that. What do we do if we're planning on having a meeting there, or we didn't expect this renovation? Maybe this is the first we're hearing of it, and we were going to meet there like in a week or two. What are you going to do for those folks?
A lot of the people that are normally here, we've already alerted that we will have kind of limited space and try to use it during the times that the children's area isn't as heavily used. We have some, you know, dead times in the afternoons and things. So trying to steer people towards that. And we're hoping that right now that's usually, you know, something that they call in advance and kind of ask us, and we'll, you know, put a sign on the table that it's reserved. I think when we're finished with the renovation, part of that is also we're purchasing like a portable room divider so that we will also be able to create some small meeting rooms in the main area of the library, which will help with some of the meetings that people don't have because there's not really a private space. So we're trying to think of all the things that happen in the library now that we can maybe be more accommodating towards.
Michelle, since I have you just another minute or two, I wanted to ask you about the $3 book sale, because that's tied into being able to have space during the renovation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We our friends group, when we receive so many used books, and we love it because really, I can tell you, we make over $15,000 a year on selling books.
$15,000? Well, I didn't expect that number, to tell you the truth.
At least for the last couple of years, we've really pumped up the, you know, the volume of what we do, and we sell on eBay and Amazon and a lot of things. But we store the conference room that we do have in the building, we really use for book processing. And what we wanted to do is to keep some of our book, you know, main circulating books on site, and wanted to use that conference room. So we decided to do an all-out blast, $3 a bag on every used book that we've had on the that we have on the shelves. So that's the bookshop. It's featured priced books, vintage books, books in, you know, that are from all genres. We just really want to get them cleared out so that we can use that room. So we have invited everybody, come fill a bag, $3 a bag. You cannot beat that price.
No, you can't. Wow, that's incredible. So I wanted to ask you if we could donate any books to you, but is now a good time to do that?
Oh, no. And okay. We tried to advertise that with a sale. Like, we're not taking any book donations now until March. We are one of the few libraries that actually accept books year-round. A lot of libraries kind of only do it during certain periods. We do it year-round, but we really needed to put it to a stop because it's such a big area in the library that we're, you know, going to be missing, that we don't have the storage space. So we've asked everybody, and to wait until March 1st, and we'll be happy to take anything you have. But if you would wait till March 1st, that would be best.
I mean, that is a huge deal. I'll just say that. I'm that kind of deal searcher. You know, give me the huge bag for $3, but all the books in it that you can. So that's, again, South Butler Community Library, West Main Street in Saxonburg. I love Saxonburg. It's just a quaint little town to begin
with. We love being here. It's great.
It is. Great people in that area, too. So, okay, so the renovations start Friday, Saturday. Which day again?
Well, we're going to be working on moving and emptying the area Friday, Saturday. The workers are here Monday morning.
All right. Michelle, thank you so much for taking some time with us, and I know it's going to be a gorgeous space, so we'll have to talk again whenever it reopens.
Oh, I'd love to do that, and I'm going to invite everybody to come once we get it done.
Good, good, good. Hey, Michelle, thanks. Take care.
You too, Tracy. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey with It's Your Turn.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 6767. The pick 3, 401. The pick 4, 3137. The pick 5, 92361. Wild ball is 3 for each of those. Treasure hunt is 1, 7, 18, 22, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
fine-tuning your furnace to money-saving, decades-lasting efficiency. Call Schneider's 1 Hour.
It seems that almost every day, there's news of a breakthrough in healthcare. New medicines and procedures, imaging that opens a new window into the human body. At Butler Health System, interventional radiologist Dr. Thomas Franco understands that even with these breakthroughs, no technology can replace the human side of care.
Every image tells us a story, but there's a bigger picture, and we never lose sight of that. Healthcare is more than practicing medicine. It's about taking the time to understand where every patient is coming from.
For cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. David Schwartzman, that understanding is ultimately the key to better outcomes.
Technology isn't enough. Skill isn't enough. We have all of that. It's about improving the quality of the lives we touch every day.
At Butler, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Well, we are down to it, aren't we? Welcome back to the program. It's Tracy Morgan in for Dave Malarkey, and we only got about 10 minutes left. And it's Friday, although the work whistle hasn't blown for a couple of more hours, so we'll just work through that. We'll keep you company, and of course, we'll get you some more news as we go throughout this afternoon. Thanks for having me this week. I do appreciate it. It's been fun. It really has been. To close out our show, I just got a couple of news bits. One I'm chuckling over. One I don't get. And we'll cover those both in just a moment. First, one of the stories that I did run out of time for, we just were packed with news at the 12 noon hour. And when I was doing the newscast, I thought, oh, I still want to mention this. And then I just ran out of time. So let me mention it now. Several local news organizations, not news organizations, several local organizations are teaming up to help unemployed, underemployed people around here in the Butler County area. United Way, a part of this, United Way of Butler County, the Butler County Community College, and Priority with the number 2, Priority to Work. They're launching a pilot program, Employment Initiative. And those interested in taking advantage of the program should call the United Way of Butler County. That's probably the best thing that you could do for an interview and conversation about what steps that you can take to be a part of this. One of those steps could be a career class. It begins in February, not until the end of February, around the 28th. It's going to be held once a week in the evening, BC3, and those classes will include developing a career plan, a resume. And I'm always curious about the whole resume issue anyway, because back in my day, you know, I'm not telling you my age, but years ago, you know, it felt like there was one way you should put a resume together. And then now that we're in the age of technology, do you do it any differently? So you can learn about that too. Practicing interview skills and networking with potential employers. So that's going to be a class that's at BC3, February 28th. But again, the route to go through is the United Way of Butler County, and you can talk about an interview or conversation there and what steps can be taken. Other order of business, but I want to tell you about it because it's a huge event. Tomorrow already is the Butler County Wine Festival. If you're joining us, let me check the time. Yeah, so at this point, you'd probably want to get tickets when you get to the door tomorrow. If you want to get tickets, that's how you do it. You can call us today, but you know we're closing in a couple hours. Close of business comes in a few hours. So if you want to join us tomorrow at the door, that's fine. There are two different sessions that you could join. We do have the 2 to 5, and then we have the 6 to 9. It'll be $25 at the door, and that'll get you your glass and some food. ButlerRadio.com, you can check out the details. We do have the details on our website, so if you do want to go there, you can go there, WISR680.com. Our number, of course, 283-1500, if you would like to call. We can give you details if you need them. Butler Day is in January 27th, tomorrow. It is our 12th annual wine festival. Allegheny Wine Cellars, or Allegheny Cellars Winery, the Kingview Mead Greenhouse Winery, Mazza Winery, we talked to them over the past week. Star Hill Winery, we talked to them as well. So we still have a few more wineries on our list. We have specialty vendors and a great atmosphere at the Butler Days Inn. Two different times, 2 to 5 or 6 to 9. All right, so we will see you tomorrow for that. Now, the two pieces of news that I just kind of, let me do the one that I just kind of shook my head at. Chaotic scenes at supermarkets. People shown on Twitter brawling. What product are they fighting over? Nutella. Nutella. You know the chocolate and hazelnut spread? Nutella. Apparently in France, I don't know if it was just in Paris, but this news comes from Paris, that the particular chain, a grocery chain there, decided to put pots of Nutella, which I don't know what it means to them to have a pot of Nutella. I don't know if that means bucket for us, but they were, or if it's just this little container they call a pot. I don't know. But they call it pots of Nutella. And they put this on a price that in our money, it would have gone from about $5.85 down to $1.75. Okay, huge sale. I get that. I understand huge sales. I'm a salesperson. Take me to a sale today. But you're fighting in a grocery store, and you're fighting over Nutella. Seriously? I said that to somebody in the office, and they said, but it is Nutella. And I'm like, back up for a moment. We're talking about fighting in a grocery store over a product. Seriously? Nutella. I mean, I'm not saying Nutella's bad. I've eaten Nutella. That's fine. I like Nutella. It's just, it's not on my bucket list to fight for any product in a given grocery store. No, just not doing it. I don't care if it's the last one on the shelf. I don't care if it's my favorite food. I'm not fighting you for it. You can have it. Have at it. I'll grab something else. So why they're fighting in France for Nutella, but I guess that sale's only going for another couple days. I don't know if there's any left. I know, everyone's fighting for it. All right, so here's my last story for you, and then I'm going to let you go because we're quickly running out of time. So this is the one I don't get, and it's not, again, that I don't like the product. I've eaten it. It's KFC. Okay, I like the product. That's fine. I've eaten it many times. I just don't get their advertising campaign. So, and it's not just, okay, it's, they released the information, the details have been released that Reba McEntire is going to be the next Colonel Sanders. That's what I thought, Pat. That was a face I had right there. So, it's not that I don't like Reba. I like Reba. Love Reba. She's a great person. And it's not that I don't like KFC. I just don't understand the advertising campaign. For the past couple of years that I've seen this rotate, I think it's their purpose. I mean, they wanted to have multiple celebrities take over the character of Colonel Sanders. I just don't get it. I don't. And I mean, they have some of the stars are in here, and it's not necessarily the stars. And believe me, don't hear me wrongly. Don't hear me incorrectly on this. I'm not saying that it's Reba McEntire and that it's a female in a male's role. No, I could care less about that. I just don't get the whole let's change the actor multiple times. And it seems like every time I'm seeing a KFC commercial, there's a whole different actor. It just doesn't connect well with me. I don't know. Do you like Reba McEntire as Colonel Sanders? And I think she's going to sing. I'm going through the news story. It just says it's going to give a bit of a country flair. I guess these ads will go until the end of April. And she says, I can't say her accent, so I'm not going to, you know, even try the Reba accent. But she says, I got a big kick out of it. I thought the transformation was really funny. And she looks good as Colonel Sanders. I mean, hey, you know, she just looks like the character. I just don't understand the, I don't understand. I don't get it. So if somebody could explain the popularity over having Colonel Sanders be a different actor or actress about every, I don't know, is it 6 months? Is it year? Every advertising campaign? Just doesn't connect well with me. Well, on that note, let's go to a wine festival. let's have a glass of wine, shall we? We'll do that tomorrow. So again, two different sessions. Most of us will be here. I don't think Dave's going to be there, so don't go expecting to see Dave. But Dave is, again, out this week. He'll return here real soon. So, again, it's been a pleasure hosting Dave's show. Glad that he allowed me to do it, and it's been nice to spend the week with you. You have a great weekend. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow at the Wine Festival. I'm Tracy Morgan, in for Dave Malarkey, for It's Your Turn.
The Knock Knights are back on the road Friday night, and WISR will be along with them. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join me as Knock travels to Montour to take on the Spartans. We'll have all the action beginning at about 7:15 with the pregame show. 7:30 is tip-off from Montour. It's all presented here on WISR in part by the law firm of Conlon Tarker, the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg,
Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, the law firm of Dillon McCandless, King, Coulter, and Graham, Troy Allen Chevrolet in Slippery Rock, and Troy Allen Buick in Gatani, Butler County District Attorney Rich Goldinger, and the Butler Health System. It's Knock and Montour Friday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and on the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
It's up-to-the-minute local, national, and world news from WISR Butler, Pennsylvania, and the CBS Radio News Network.